presentation of their case, and they've got 22 minutes left on their clock, total time, and then we've got about 18 minutes or so for the city of Morgan Hill to present their testimony, and then we still have speakers, public speakers. We probably have a good hour left just on this one agenda item. We're on number 15 right now. So we ready to resume?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're waiting for Owen. Okay. To proceed?
Yeah, the rest of the party will be here in a few minutes, so I can pick up.
Okay. If you're ready to pick up, we'll do that. We finished number 18. We'll go back now to 15.
So I think where we left off, we were talking about one well versus two wells to capture priority zone A. And just to
I'm going to start the clock again.
Sure.
At this point.
Just to recap on that issue, this is something that we've been working with. And by we, I should probably expound that this is MACTEC working in conjunction with GeoSyntec. There's a whole other company that's been involved with designing the treatment system. So this is something that we've been working forward to. We've designed a system with one well to capture the plume core, and we believe that's going to be an effective treatment to remediate perchlorate in groundwater in short order. Let's see. The next couple slides, I think I can work through pretty quickly. They regard our objections and concerns about the schedules that were included in the cleanup and abatement order. And again, we realize that there is a supplemental information provided yesterday. And we understand that there's the option to request extensions for any of these deadlines. The one that the overarching concern that we have is we'd prefer to work with a reasonable schedule from the beginning rather than have to rely on extensions down the road. And there are several, perhaps the first one is has been less of an issue now that we've clarified one versus two wells. But the second deadline, the March 28, in order for us to install a deep aquifer monitoring well and have it tested by March 28, we would have to know where that extraction well would be located now. Because we're still in the process of characterizing the deep aquifer and delineating perchlorate at that interval, we don't know where that extraction well should be located, and it's very unlikely that we'll have a well installed by this time. And for that reason, we recommended that the CEO be modified to come up with a more reasonable schedule. I don't think we are in a position to put out a date here, but again, this is just our concern regarding tying this together with characterization and remediation.
So you don't have any idea what a reasonable date would be?
What we would like to do is finish the characterization of the deep aquifer and then give us it's taken us about 9 months for the intermediate to install and height, and we're in the process of testing the extraction well there. What we would like to do is finish the deep aquifer characterization and then on the order of 9 months from that point have a deadline to install and hydraulically test a deep aquifer extraction well.
And you don't have any idea when you're going to have the deep aquifer defined?
Well, we intend to have it complete by next year, but again, we're in the process of installing monitoring wells right now. We don't have analytical results from those wells, and they may change the picture quite a bit. We don't know.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we just have them come back at that time or write us and tell us how far along they are? I mean, is this something that the EO can change?
That's where we have it set up, is that you would direct me to issue the cleanup abatement order so that it could be modified.
So that's built into it right now?
The ability to modify?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. All right. So you are aware of that,
yes.
Right, that the EO has the discretion to modify that deadline?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, and the next slide is really more of the same issues with just our desire to work, start with a more reasonable schedule. Again, with the information that was provided yesterday in the supplemental provision, that this may not be as much of an issue as we had thought before, but again, we were concerned. And that's pretty much the second issue that we included in our letter as far as the revised cleanup and abatement order. I've got really two more technical issues that we wanted to restate our position. The first is with the alternative cleanup level. We believe that there's enough information that the cleanup and abatement order could be could accept an alternative cleanup level of 6 parts per billion. That's equal to the public health goal. This was something that we've considered and evaluated in the revised FS, which is where we proposed an alternative cleanup level. And I'm not going to read the whole slide, but the bottom line is that given that the predominant beneficial use of this basin is for drinking water purposes, we believe that this is also the appropriate cleanup goal. The second point I'm going to hold off on in the moment, since we have talked about the tenant well, I thought we'd just jump ahead here and address this first and then finish with our second point regarding the Northeast. As we've talked about already before, Olin concurs with the current cleanup and abatement order language to exclude the tenant well from purposes of a cleanup. The purpose of an extraction well is to expedite cleanup without exacerbating the problem, without inducing other problems. And the problem with a tenant well from a cleanup standpoint is that it's not built in the right location or constructed properly as an extraction well should be. It's not benefiting, it's not making the problem better without causing other problems.
Well, what other problem is it causing?
We've seen very clearly in the deep aquifer monitoring wells beneath the site, when the tenant well was not operating, concentrations were consistently non-detect, below 4 parts per billion. Within one quarter of the tenant well becoming operated again, those concentrations have consistently climbed to the point where now, I believe, two of the three wells are consistently over 30 parts per billion. And there's no doubt that this is due directly to the tenant well operating. You could argue that the tenant well is removing some mass, but that doesn't negate the problem that it's inducing perchlorate where we didn't have it in the first place. So it's not an effective extraction well in the sense of a cleanup standpoint. It's not designed as an extraction well. We're working with through our characterization process to install a purpose-built, properly located and constructed deep aquifer well, and that's the course that needs to be taken. With respect to the tenant well, as far as replacement water goes, as we talked about before already, the San Pedro well has already been installed to replace that well as an interim action. That occurred in 2002. The production capacity for San Pedro, I'd actually seen the earlier data that indicated a capacity of about 560 GPM, and I see the more recent data now that actually has that a little bit higher at 600, and that's certainly more than what the tenant well is producing. So the election to use the tenant well with treatment in place of or instead of the San Pedro, that really has nothing to do with the replacement aspects. The tenant well's already been replaced. And then again, the appropriateness of the tenant well as a cleanup well or as an extraction well, it's just not designed or located for that purpose. We believe that this is really an attempt for cost recovery for the tenant well operation and not really geared towards cleanup. We just included one graphic here to demonstrate. This is data provided from the city of Morgan Hill. This is millions of gallons produced every month from the tenant well in blue back through here. And then the in fuchsia is the San Pedro. And as far as replacement goes, the way these two wells have been operated, the San Pedro well is certainly capable of replacing the tenant from a capacity standpoint. So from my opinion, there's really no issue here as far as whether San Pedro replaces tenant adequately or not. It certainly does. So that was the only couple slides we wanted to talk about the tenant. Just to go.
Let me just stop you for a moment. I don't see that really as the issue.
Okay.
At least from what I understand their briefing is on. It seems to me that they just need additional water, and that this is a well that could provide that additional supply. The problem with it has perchlorate in it. So I'm not sure that they may not be entitled to some kind of cost recovery at some point in time that correlates with their water demand reaching a certain point that they would be entitled to get more water supply from their own basins. And I'm unresolved in my mind how that plays out. So I don't. I agree that San Pedro replaced Tenet, no question, and gave them more water. But that's not the issue in my mind at this point. It's something else.
Okay.
And it may look like an attempt to do cost recovery on that well. I see through that, too. But I just want to make sure that there isn't a legitimate claim for their need for additional clean water. So,
well, then the issue becomes whether Olin should pay for that, given that they've already replaced the capacity and then some of the Tenet well. I don't believe that accounts for future production increases, or whether that requires that the Tenet well itself be operated with or without treatment.
Or some other supply.
Right.
I mean, certainly they should be entitled to tap into their groundwater supplies to meet their demands. And
certainly,
if they keep on putting straws into the aquifer to bring up their water to use.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Would an analogy be, maybe semi-close analogy, somebody who's in the southern part of the plume has a vacant parcel, and their only source of it's a rural area, the only source of water is a water well, and it's in the red zone. It seems like they would be in a position to recover costs from Olin because they were denied use of that water. Is that an analogy?
That's a fair analogy to make, yeah.
I think then to continue that analogy, though, Morgan Hill certainly has access to other property outside the red zone, and our position has consistently been that reoperation of the Tenet well is going to exacerbate the problem by drawing perchlorate into the deep aquifer where it wasn't before. And from a technical perspective, that's something that we have to address. That before we had non-detect at three wells, and now we've got basically we have a priority zone A, where we had no priority zone A before beneath the site, because of operation of the Tenet, as we said that and feared that would be the case. So, their decision to operate the Tenet well, rather than other wells or operate the San Pedro well, they had that shut down for some time. That's their election, and if it requires treatment, then that's also their election.
Well, I don't know that we have enough information at this point for the board to maybe even resolve that component of the cleanup and abatement order. Maybe something that the board wants to be briefed further, in the short term to get a resolve. But I've heard enough that I just have more questions and would like to see more analysis.
Okay.
And I don't. If there was some kind of cost recovery allowed, I don't know what that number should be, if it is allowed, when it would start, how much. I mean, if they can drill another well and get clean water, perhaps that's what they should do. I mean, there's a lot of things for us to hear about before we can really weigh in on it. So,
not sure that's our purview anyway, as far as a cost allocation like that.
And it may not be. The board may want to do something that it maybe it can't do. So, anyway, you've got a minute and 40 seconds before it's 15 left.
Okay. Well, then let me just wrap up with our last points here.
Okay.
The second technical issue that we just really disagree with the cleanup and abatement order is regarding the northeast area. Even though the order acknowledges that there is another source likely responsible for the detections well to the north, it doesn't expressly exclude Olin from responsibility from that area, and it really should. And there's really three main points. The first is that because of the direction of groundwater flow and the recharge in that area, the Olin site is hydraulically isolated from this northern part of the subbasin. The detections, which is the second point, are widespread and persistent, and they simply could not have come from the Olin site. So there's no reason that there should be even consideration for Olin with respect to that. And the third is that there is another source to the north, and that's the United Technologies Corporation site, UTC. And I'll show you all these points on the map, but UTC is a well-known perchlorate user, millions of pounds of perchlorate used for the past several decades. This is the northeast area for everybody's benefit. This is the site on the Tennant Avenue. The northeast area is basically synonymous with Morgan Hill and points further north. This blue area, the lake, is the Anderson Reservoir. It's the largest reservoir in the county. And the dotted blue line represents the groundwater divide. To the south is the Yaga subbasin. To the north is the Coyote. You can consider that the peak of a roof. Groundwater to the north of that blue line flows to the north and through the Coyote subbasin. Groundwater to the south of that blue line flows to the south. That's the regional directions of flow. Anderson Reservoir significantly influences that divide, but this is also topographically driven as well. And in fact, this is also the regional board distinction between San Francisco Board and Central Coast. There is significant recharge occurring in this area in addition to Anderson Reservoir and rainfall. These are percolation ponds owned and operated by the Water District. This is the Main Avenue Ponds, built in 1955. This long string of ponds is the Madrone Ponds. Those were built in 1974-75. San Pedro was built in 1990 and made permanent in 1996. The combination of all this recharge, in addition to the groundwater divide, hydraulically isolates Olin from this upper portion of the basin. And as such, the detections that occur in there could not have come from Olin. And the next slide really makes that point as far as these detections are concerned. The groundwater cannot cross from one side of the divide to another, and yet we have perchlorate on both sides of the divide, both in the Coyote Basin at several municipal water district wells and also two or three domestic wells, and all through this area to the north. The higher concentrations have a correlation with proximity to Anderson Reservoir Dam. These are clearly not related to Olin. The UTC site would be located up here if the slide extended that far to the north, on the north side of Anderson Reservoir. It's very likely that this is, I certainly feel that this is coming from UTC ultimately through one or numerous potential pathways, including migration ultimately through the reservoir. These ponds ultimately received Anderson Reservoir water up until a couple decades ago. There's airborne fallout that the Water District has even acknowledged that could have contaminated a widespread area. So in summary, the northeast area is clearly not related to Olin. So to not expressly exclude the northeast area for Olin's responsibility is not correct. And that's, again, this is something we've been looking into more and more for several years now. And I think the picture is pretty clear. And I think that's pretty much it. So just in brief summary, I think we've got a good cleanup plan, and we should stick with it. It's consistent with the original cleanup and abatement order, and we'd like to proceed with that as quickly as possible.
Okay.
So, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any board questions or comments?
I've got one.
Mr. Briggs?
Yes, I've got a couple questions. You were talking about the one of your objections to including priority zone B in the active remediation was that it would delay things.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't quite understand that. So why not? Why couldn't you proceed with your plans for priority zone A? And what we propose on page 22 of the cleanup order, number 4. Was that by April 15th, you submit a cleanup work plan that proposes a system that will provide effective control of zones A and B. So why couldn't you proceed as you intended? And I believe you said you could meet the schedule were it not for this change, right?
Well, some of the delays we were concerned could occur by the need for a second extraction well. And if that's not necessarily the case, if that's been clarified now, then some of those delays may not actually exist. However, there's still a concern that by expanding the required hydraulic capture to include priority zone B, and let's say that doubles the flow rate, that still requires an engineering reconsideration. You know, now there's a conveyance change, there's a treatment just due to the volume of water that would be treated, and then disposing twice as much water versus the plan that we've been working with for the past year on a well capturing the plume core, being priority zone A.
But my assumption is that you would address those challenges in this plan. It's due April 15th. Proceed with A, and you have an opportunity until April to try to figure out a way to deal with those additional challenges.
Well, I think the main point is that we've been working on a plan for priority zone A for a long time now. That's involved a lot of people, a lot of engineers putting together this plan, and we've simply been caught off guard by it may appear to be a relatively small change by increasing capture to priority zone A, but it's not. That there's a lot of moving pieces to this program, and to change that, it requires potentially stepping back and asking, is this really consistent with our original plan? How easy could that be to expand the system? And that was originally part of the intent of the contingency plan to allow for that expansion, but you know, once we had some additional data from the priority zone A hydraulic capture plan, our point is that capture priority zone A is going to take care of the problem. You know, that's going to attenuate the perchlorate further down gradient very quickly. There's no need to increase the capacity to explicitly capture priority zone B. There's just no need, and it changes a lot of the big, a lot of the engineering assumptions, the planning, the design that went into this. Even if we are left with one well that can do that,
if the hot zones support the less hot zones, doesn't it stand to reason that the more perchlorate you remove, and the faster you remove it, the faster the basin is going to clean up?
With respect to down gradient, there's no incremental difference.
I didn't say down gradient.
Well, within the hydraulic capture area, I think the operation of one well, you know, capturing that price. Well, I think to answer your question, there may be some. It may speed things a little bit, but based on what we're already seeing from on-site, this perchlorate is a dissolvable. It's a highly soluble compound. It doesn't absorb. It doesn't stick around like other compounds might. When you capture that plume core and capture it, the rest of the dissolved phase of that compound is going to clean up very quickly, and we've seen that. You know, when we look at the on-site system and we look down gradient, within a year or two, concentrations that one well in particular had dropped from almost 200 parts per billion down to about 10. That's going to happen on a larger scale by capturing the plume core priority zone A. So there's just no need to engineer a larger system. The incremental difference is just de minimis. That's what our designing has concluded.
So you're saying that if the attenuation doesn't happen as we expect, that your contingency plan would just be de minimis, have a de minimis effect on the extraction well?
No. What I'm saying is that as far as the monitored attenuation in the downgrading area goes, hydraulic capture of the priority zone A will do the same thing as what a much larger system intended to capture priority zone B will do. We've still cut off the source. There's a lot of attenuation that's already occurring down gradient. When you cut off what's feeding that, mm-hmm. there's nothing left for it to sustain itself. It'll attenuate very rapidly.
Right. Yeah. I guess I'm still hung up on the 24.5 because you could actually make zone A smaller if you went to 50 or 100 and say that's the core that's feeding the rest, right?
Right.
That's the core we have to get to. The rest is de minimis. Is that right?
Well, we're not saying that the rest is de minimis, though. We've just identified the plume core as 24.5, you know, numerically based on the EPA PRG, and by capturing that, the priority zone B area will attenuate very quickly.
Okay, thanks.
I just let it
go ahead.
couple of questions.
Go ahead.
As I'm sure you can tell by what we wrote and also by my questions, what we're trying to do is be as aggressive as possible, mm-hmm. require you to go after this as aggressively as possible, still be reasonable about it. And to me, it stands to reason that if you're going to remove more perchlorate and you're going to remove that sooner rather than later, the basin's going to clean up faster. I understand you're saying that your cleanup plan will get the wells that are impacted to the public health goal in a reasonably fast period of time.
Well, we believe that the domestic wells down gradient are going to drop below the public health goal.
May I?
Try? Sure.
To back up, addressing Priority Zone A in the fashion that it's been presented and been approved, there is no disagreement between Olin and the board staff. That plan has been, judged to be effective. Our whole point of the presentation is as plainly, I guess, as I can boil it down, is to say that the considerable additional expense is not warranted because there's simply really no incremental benefit to expanding it. And the supplemental point was about a potential delay. And that comes from, engineering and re-engineering is one thing, but I think, the end point of that is doubling a 250% increase in the amount of water could change the treatment methodology. It could make a small bio plant more effective than ion exchange, and it could necessitate a change in where that water is re-injected. So the changes are more than just doing a little more engineering work. It could kind of change the face of what is needed to be implemented. Does that help?
Yeah, I understand, but I think you're looking at it in terms of dealing with the change all at once, and that means you might have to take a step back. What I'm saying is proceed with what you've had planned, and then I think we need to evaluate the effectiveness of doing more. And what does it take to do more? Because that's the way I'm looking at it.
Okay. And I don't know that I actually have a disagreement with that statement. It comes back to something that you just said, and that's what's reasonable. We have an aggressive approach to address Priority Zone A, and is it reasonable, considering all the ramifications and the benefits, weighing the potential benefits of adding B, is it reasonable? And I think we can make our case, but that's a decision that will be made.
And what's reasonable is going to be different in the eyes of the beholder.
That's kind
whether,
of my...
Whether you're a member of that community that lives on that water, your water supply, or you're a company that is having to pay for remediation or cleanup.
Right.
So.
And yes, I agree. And it is important. There's no aspect of anything that's being discussed that's unimportant.
Right.
I think Mike tried to point out that for the effort and for the multiple millions of dollars that would need to be applied, there's three wells that are, up gradient of a B and down gradient from A. And he explained how those wells, from an exposure standpoint, have been addressed. And so is that incremental benefit worth it?
So it boils down to really how fast do we want to get it cleaned up? And should we spend additional money to do so when we really have only three wells involved? They're drinking clean water anyway because it's being treated. So there's no harm to them one way or the other. And so how many additional years would they have to drink filtered water is, I guess, in a sense, not that big a deal. It's just the time element for those people versus the cost element for you guys to speed up the cleanup.
I wouldn't nonchalantly stand here and say it's no big deal. But I think what Mike tried to technically point out is that there isn't a substantial cleanup time frame difference.
Right.
Considering this.
No, I understand that. I'm just trying to boil it down to its nuts and bolts.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, I really disagree with saying anything along the lines, not a big deal, because even if it's just three wells are affected or only one well that's in use, it's a big deal to them, and it's a big deal to a lot of people. And I don't think any of us should be ever using phrases like there are only 48 wells that are affected or only three wells that are affected. Additionally, we're not just looking at the current uses of the groundwater. Our charge is to look at the groundwater as a resource, as a whole. And so the goal is cleanup of the basin as a whole, not just meeting drinking water standards for existing uses. There are, as Mr. Shallcross was alluding to, there are future potential users of the groundwater. I just had a couple more questions, Mr. Chair, if I could. Getting back to the point I was making earlier, you think that you're going to have a fairly fast, relatively speaking, a relatively fast rate of concentration decrease in the groundwater towards the drinking water standard. Is that right?
Yes, to below the drinking water standard.
You had you showed some charts that showed pretty relatively steep decline.
Right.
Is there anything physically associated with the concentration of 6 micrograms per liter that would change that rate of decline?
Let me make sure I understand your question. Are you asking at the 6 part per billion level, would we expect to see a steep decline into the future?
Right.
I think I would see a drop very shortly after hydraulic capture. Whether it's a steep decline or not, I think one of the problems when you get down to 6 is you're already very close to the detection level. So whether it steeply declines to 4 and then 2, I don't know about the steepness. But the main point that we're saying is that most of those domestic wells further down gradient are already bouncing around 6. And to drop them below the MCL of 6 is really not a significant, shouldn't be a significant accomplishment. Now, they're right now already attenuating. The fact that we've seen almost 300 wells that don't even require sampling is really testament to that, not only just to the cleanup level, but to below that cleanup level. So that's what we expect to enhance by cutting off the source of perchlorate that's continuing to feed that perchlorate down gradient at those domestic wells.
I guess I'm looking for you to verify my perception that 6 is not a magic line in terms of the remediation, the reduction in concentration, and that line, that steep curve is going to continue. It'll probably at some point below that start leveling off.
Yeah, we refer to 6 from a health perspective, from the PHG and the cleanup, the MCL, and obviously our position is that that's the appropriate cleanup level. But we understand the cleanup and abatement order calls for cleanup to background, and there's nothing that's going to stop decline of concentrations at 6. And again, we've already seen wells that have dropped to below 6 to the point where sampling is no longer needed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Dr. Hunter.
I want to go back to the point you made that 3 wells would be directly affected by Zone B expansion. And if you could go back to the map that shows the 48 wells, do you have an overlay that shows how those 48 wells fall relative to Zone A and Zone B?
Well, they are all located here.
That would be Zone A and Zone B.
Right.
And how many wells are there, roughly?
Off the top of my head, I don't know, but it looks like on the order of maybe 10.
Maybe 10. So I guess the question I have for staff is, do we agree that only 3 wells would benefit from Zone B? I don't know that I may not have heard it or maybe didn't catch it. What's behind the the idea that we need to expand to Zone B? Was there something, I can hear the discussion, we're talking about speeding it up and possibly seeing a benefit in a shorter period of time, but what is the reason for making this change at this point in time? And would these other 10 wells possibly see a shorter time frame for lowered perchlorate measure?
Our rationale behind adding priority zone B to the active cleanup portion was twofold. First of all, it's exclusively in the intermediate zone. Now, the correlation is that the intermediate zone is the zone that is of dominant use for drinking water wells. That's why we limited it just exclusively to that zone. Mm-hmm. The second reason was that we felt that the timeline was not sufficient, that we wanted accelerated cleanup for the intermediate zone.
Again, what is that timeline?
For the same reason.
What is the current timeline if it remains just zone A?
The current approach where the extraction well that's shown here is going to hydraulically contain priority zone A, the predicted time frames, because these are just predicted because we don't have the actual well data and results yet, the predicted time frames for a well that's close to the site in that red area is 12 years to reach 6 parts per billion. And that well that's down gradient of those three circled domestic
point.
Wells.
Can you point?
There you go. Yeah.
Someone's pointing.
There we go.
Thank you. Is estimated to be 1 year.
Okay. Okay. And so would you say that the potential benefit is not just three wells, but possibly 13, somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 wells if zone B were to be included in the extraction?
Maybe you can explain the point. Maybe you were pointing and I missed it, but where were you talking about the 12 years?
I believe the well that was used in the analysis is right up there. Is that correct?
I think it was actually one of these two wells. But
MW16 right there. And then MW21 is where it was predicted to be 1 year. And once again, these are predictions. I'd like to see this well pumping. They're going to hydraulically test and evaluate the results at the end of this year. We should have some data at the beginning of the year to see what kind of results we're seeing, what kind of hydraulic capture zone we're seeing. And the other thing I wanted to point out, those 10 wells, domestic wells, I'm not sure about these three, but the domestic supply wells surrounding this elevated perchlorate concentration area all have ion exchange on them.
Okay.
So in regards to the cleanup, they're already protected with their own individual ion exchange.
Okay, right, because they're about 7.9.
Right.
Is that 7.2 or 7.9?
7.9.
Okay.
And Taya, what about the three in that circle? How many of those wells, what is their protection? Are they all being used for drinking water?
You know, actually, I think these wells, I don't know what the numbers are. These might be below. Are they in the?
I can answer that if you'd like.
Yeah.
Two of the wells are actually below 6 right now.
Okay.
The third well, it's probably due to how they're constructed. They're different. The third well already has an IX system installed on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember at 2.9 right now for one of those. Because this is this plume shows. You know, the intermediate aquifer is really thick, and the domestic supply wells are screened in different zones. So wherever the domestic supply well is screened, it doesn't necessarily mean that have consistent concentrations all the way throughout.
Okay.
If I could add to John's answer to Ms. Hunter's question, though, repeating myself a little bit, but one of the basic ideas was, it gets back to Mr. Shallcross's observation, what's magical about the 24.5? Why not make the red zone 20? Why not make it 16? And that's really the way I was looking at it, is it would seem to me that it would be a good idea, in order to be as aggressive as possible, to shoot higher, aim higher, and try to remove more perchlorate faster to get to cleanup faster. I think that's, everybody would agree, that's a goal. And I think it's just a question of how do we reasonably get there. I think if we construct this so that we have Olin proceed with priority zone A and have them come up with a plan. We can evaluate that as far as getting it covering priority zone B. I think part of what Taya is saying is that we may find out that that extraction well that's already proposed will get much of B anyway.
And if I should add to that also, this is a phased approach. And the basic premise behind that is that we would evaluate as cleanup proceeds. Part of the evaluation is to determine, for staff to determine, whether or not the dedicated groundwater extraction well is effective enough to be as effective as we want it to be. And if, based on our evaluation, if that does not occur, then part of the phased part of this approach is to require additional wells if necessary.
So if we were to hold to the expanded extraction in Zone B because of the process you just described, if we ask them to start working on this now, does that in effect put a game plan into play as opposed to waiting until you see a year down the line what the results might be? In other words, by requiring them to consider extraction in Zone B, and as I understand it, they don't have a plan for that. They don't have a design. They would have to go through all the same process they did to come up with the extraction system or design for Zone A. If we require them to do B starting now, does that get us a little bit ahead of the game in terms of phased evaluation and understanding if we have to increase the extraction rates through additional wells? It seems to me that Zone B would be the next logical area to include, and if we ask them to start this process now, at the end of a year, when you've got the first monitoring or you've got enough monitoring information coming out of the Zone A extraction well, if you decide you need more, this extended area for B is already in the works. It's already designed and evaluated and looked at technically in the feasibility. Am I getting that right? Or
yeah, I believe that is consistent with what Roger was explaining, that they can start with the current, the existing well that they've located, get that going, evaluate that system, and determine exactly how effective and how much coverage it provides. In the meantime, in conjunction with that, evaluate the potential for another well to provide expanded coverage within a certain time frame. And I don't have an idea of how much time would be required to do that. We would get to a point where we would know exactly how effective the existing system is and whether or not an additional well is necessary to accomplish the goal of effective hydraulic treatment.
So I'm trying to understand, if we don't require the condition to expand to B now, as of today, would it not be triggered then? Would that process not be triggered until we get to that point where you've got enough monitoring data to say, oh, this isn't enough, we have to expand, and then start the engineering and the technical? Is that the difference?
I think it sets back the clock if we don't include B today, priority zone B today. And I kind of want to add on to something that Hector was describing. On April 15th, is this on? On April 15th, they're required to submit their intermediate aquifer zone cleanup plan, which I anticipate will contain contingencies should the single well not prove adequate to capture both priority zone A and B. Mm-hmm. And what we're describing is an adaptive management strategy, in a sense, here. Does this work? Let's start building contingencies in case it doesn't. Bring them into play if we make that determination that it doesn't work.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to move this along, if I can, because we've got plenty to cover yet. You've got 12 minutes, 15 seconds, and we're ready to start with the city. Is that right, Mr. Briggs?
And they have this order right here.
Okay. Is this part of the city's presentation? This is Rosemary Kimme. That's
right?
The Santa Clara Water District.
Is that correct?
Do you want the water district?
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Ed Tweez. I'm the city manager of the city of Morgan Hill. Those of us who are not Olin had discussed with Mr. Briggs earlier the order that we would like to make our presentation, okay. And the city of Morgan Hill would be the last of those.
Ah, I see. So this is how you want to go.
Yeah.
With Rosemary Kimmel first. Okay. So, all right. Rosemary Kimmel, Wendy Rooney, Colleen Freeman, Tracy Hemeter, Steve Tate, Ed Tweez, and Andrea Ventura. Those are the cards that I have. All right. And then Mr. Hawk, at some point, we're going to hear from him, right? Ah, okay. All right, three minutes and write down 12:15.
I got that.
Okay. Ready?
Almost. There we go.
Okay, great.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Thank you so much for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Rosemary Kimmel, and I'm an elected member representing the southern portion of Santa Clara County from South San Jose, Morgan Hill, San Martin, and Gilroy for 14 years. I'm also a 24-year resident of the city of Morgan Hill, where I have raised my two children, and I do drink the city water. So I have direct experience here. The district is a groundwater management agency for Santa Clara County, and it also provides wholesale water supply, watershed stewardship, and flood protection for the county's 1.7 million residents. Unlike other areas of the county with multiple water supply sources, the South County area and community relies on the Yagas subbasin as its sole source aquifer. Families and businesses have no other drinking water source in this area. Agricultural users depend on the groundwater for their livelihood. Due to the perchlorate contamination, the residents of this community have lived in uncertainty and anxiety for 4 years over the safety of their water supply. The district appreciates the regional board's attention and really hard work from the board and the staff related to the Olin perchlorate contamination, as well as your efforts to address the community's concerns. However, we believe that the draft cleanup and abatement order falls very short of the community's goal of a time-certain plan to restore water quality in the Yagas subbasin. Other than the treatment of a small area, the draft order allows for a minimalist and passive approach to restoring water quality. Under the draft plan, the delivery of bottled water, which began as an emergency fix, is likely to continue for more than a decade. This is not really acceptable to the community, and it is not in keeping with the state policy of requiring cleanup to background levels. The regional board has a duty to protect and restore the community's water supply. We urge the regional board to compel Olin to immediately begin active and comprehensive cleanup of all aquifer zones. The board must also hold Olin accountable for effective and time-certain restoration of water quality through tangible actions and timelines. We also encourage the regional board staff to consider all cleanup alternatives. Families, farmers, and businesses in South County really have struggled with the impacts and the desire to resolve cleanup of the perchlorate contamination for 4 years. They deserve real solutions to restore their water supply and water and their quality of life. On behalf of the Santa Clara Valley Water District, I really want to thank you for the opportunity to provide this input. And I know that there's a lot of weighing that you need to do, and your decision is not easy. But I do thank you for your time today. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Kimmel? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Wendy Rooney?
Good afternoon. I start off saying good morning, but that's
wait,
changed.
Wait. What is this?
Copies of my presentation.
Of what you're telling us
right
now?
Just the talking points, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Wendy Rooney, and I'm the Director of Community Development for the City of Gilroy, and I, too, am a resident of Gilroy. First and foremost, the City of Gilroy appreciates the Regional Board's attention to the problems and concerns that the Olin perchlorate contamination has caused South County, and also the work over the last 4 years in directing the cleanup efforts. However, the city believes that the draft cleanup and abatement order to Olin Corporation does not adequately address the cleanup of the aquifer and does not meet the needs and expectations of our regional community. We completely agree with the November 1st, 2007 letter from the Santa Clara Valley Water District to the Regional Board, and in that letter outlined six issues, and I just want to touch on three of them. First off, the City of Gilroy is very concerned with limiting active remediation to Priority Zone A and possibly adding just Priority Zone B. By limiting the cleanup area to Priority Zones A and possibly B, a large area of the perchlorate-contaminated drinking water supply aquifer would have no active remediation at all. The city requests cleanup of the entire perchlorate-impacted aquifer, including the northeast area, consistent with state policy. Our second concern is the lack of clarity and scope in the draft CAO. The draft CAO should clearly list all outstanding requirements and their deadlines in a form that would allow stakeholders to obtain a clear picture of the schedule and scope. The CAO should clearly identify and include measurable milestones that will produce a time-certain comprehensive cleanup of the entire basin. Third, the city is very concerned with the long timeline for compliance and one of the most important action items, which is the Area 1 plume migration control system. There are several methods of implementing interim remediation that are available to Olin. The City of Gilroy strongly encourages the Water Board to mandate immediate migration control so that unimpacted areas such as the City of Gilroy and other private and public wells do not become contaminated with perchlorate. Again, the City of Gilroy does appreciate your staff's efforts on the CAO. However, the communities of South Santa Clara County, which comprise more than 100,000 people, have waited too long for a comprehensive basin-wide cleanup plan that will restore the drinking water supply to background level. That is consistent with state policy. We look to your leadership and strongly urge you, as the only ones who can, to uphold your duty and protect and restore South County's sole source drinking water supply by compelling Olin to implement meaningful active measures to immediately remediate this longstanding perchlorate contamination. I thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Dr. Hunter?
Do you have any suggested interim remediation actions that Olin?
I would actually leave that to our technical experts with the Water District.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Colleen Freeman?
Obviously, I'm not Colleen Freeman, but I think there was a card out of order. I'm
okay.
Greg Van Wassenhove, representing the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors. I submitted a card.
Were you part of this group?
Yes.
Is that right? Is he part of you?
Is he one of yours? Okay, I see your card, so we'll go ahead and insert it.
You're in the middle of the Olin group.
Sorry, I better sit down.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Again, Greg Van Wassenhove representing the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors. We had drafted a letter based upon the revised cleanup and abatement order submitted November 22nd. It was not accepted, so I'll read that letter into the hearing. The County of Santa Clara is hereby submitting its concerns on the draft cleanup abatement order for Olin Corporation. Although the County appreciates the efforts of the Regional Board to mitigate the perchlorate contamination, the proposed CAO does not adequately address the strategy for cleanup and restoration of the Lagos groundwater subbasin. These inadequacies have also been identified in a letter dated November 2nd, 2007, from the Perchlorate Working Group, of which the County is a member. The major concern of the county and its perchlorate working group is the CAO does not require active remediation of the groundwater contamination throughout the subbasin, but only mandates cleanup in the areas of highest concentration. While the CAO proposes monitored attenuation in other contaminated areas and allows for further studies to be implemented, the county does not agree this is the best strategy to restoring the groundwater to its condition before the perchlorate contamination. The Regional Board has already approved the plume migration control work plan as a strategy, so the County recommends active remediation begin immediately in all areas of the subbasin where perchlorate levels have been found above the maximum contamination level for drinking water as established by the state. This broader cleanup strategy protects our greater community who use private wells as their sole source of drinking water and those who rely on the wells for irrigation, agriculture, home gardens, or livestock. Requiring active remediation throughout the subbasin also addresses community concerns about the continued use of bottled water and well filters. So on behalf of the Board of Supervisors and for the County of Santa Clara, we urge the Regional Board to hold Olin Corporation accountable for its actions by strengthening the CAO to address the concerns of the Perchlorate Working Group, the Perchlorate Community Advisory Group, Santa Clara Valley Water District, and the cities of Morgan Hill and Gilroy. The perchlorate contamination has impacted the county and the community it serves for over 4 years now, and it is time for us time certain comprehensive plan to restore groundwater quality in the Lagos subbasin. That's on behalf of Don Gage, our Board of Supervisors. And if I got 15 seconds, I might add something. I heard a comment. I'm also the county's agriculture commissioner, mandated by the state to protect our $244 million agriculture industry in the county. And I heard a comment about the water being used in that area, mostly for domestic purposes. You might want to check that source. It's mostly used for agriculture purposes. And there's also a lot of wells that were originally deemed ag wells that are now being used domestically that are not in that count. So when you say, or people are saying, we can clean up three and there's only 48, I don't believe that database is correct. And I've discussed it with staff, and I think we're going to work through that. But I did want to point that out to the board.
Thank you for your comments.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Tracy Hemeter and Steve.
Can you call me back in order? Yes.
Excuse me. There you are.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Colleen Freeman, and I'm here representing Assemblymember John Laird. Mr. Laird had an op-ed published in the Morgan Hill Times, and unfortunately, because we could not submit it into the official record, I just wanted to reiterate some of the points that he made in that op-ed to you today. This has been an issue that the assembly member has been following since he took office 5 years ago. And he does want to commend the staff for all their hard work. He knows that you're doing your best to reflect the community's concerns in the CAO, but he would like to see more done. Like many of the other people who have spoken today and will speak today, he also agrees that monitored attenuation, he would like to see more active remediation throughout the plume. He would also concur with the Santa Clara Valley Water District's recommendations to both do more active remediation throughout the plume and also to begin interim efforts to begin the cleanup while the details of how to address the core plume are worked out over the next couple of years. Also, the assembly member feels that after 5 years, if there are domestic or municipal wells that are still measuring over 6 parts per billion, he feels like Olin should be responsible for providing replacement water, whether that is through ion exchange or continued, well, actually, ion exchanges. And then lastly, I do understand that we're not going to see the contingency plans in the CAO report, although the assembly member has supported the Perchloric Advisory Group's recommendation that these contingency plans are laid out in the CAO. So if that is still a possibility, we do want to reiterate that request. And if they are not in the CAO, we do want to emphasize the need to have a contingency plan that has very clear timetables, triggers, benchmarks, methods of analysis, a very comprehensive plan that will give the communities that are affected by this contamination assurances that if the cleanup does not go as predicted, there are plans in place to change course quickly. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, Tracy Hemeter, then Steve Tate, Ed Tweez, and Andrea Ventura.
Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Tracy Hemeter. I'm here today on behalf of Sylvia Hamilton, who for medical reasons couldn't be here. Sylvia is the chair of the Perchlorate Community Advisory Group, and I think you probably know, and I'm sure everyone in this audience would attest to the fact that she would be here if she could be. So on behalf of Sylvia, and also I can answer any questions if you have any on her behalf. PCAG appreciates everything you and your staff have done in support of the community, including the recent addition of pump and treat for priority zone B in the intermediate aquifer. I'm going to add a little bit little. She said I could. That idea of never, we should never say only 48 wells. That's something that's very important. We need to keep that in mind. We must all continue to work very hard to make sure this critical long-term cleanup order appropriately protects quality of life for current and future residents of the Yaga Subbasin, and to do so without delay. PCAG submits. The new extraction well in the intermediate aquifer needs to be immediately up and running for priority zone A. The deep aquifer extraction well that has already been approved needs to be installed immediately and online prior to the two-year time frame estimate. Rather than relying on Olin's time frame and cleanup level for zones A and B, PCAG suggests that the Water Board aggressively require Olin to determine the number of additional wells necessary to bring the time frame to a more reasonable expectation, and to clearly state that the cleanup goal is background. PCAG submits that this should be the goal for the entire contaminated Yaga subbasin. The goal is not the PHG or the MCL or 24 or 11 or any other number. And also that the board should reject monitored attenuation as a viable alternative. Perchlorate may move to another location, but it does not disappear or dissolve on its own. Clear contingency plans need to be required that provide triggers and timelines and specify alternatives. For 4.5 years, the residents of the Yaga subbasin have lived with the stress of the situation. How long is it reasonable to expect this to continue? Morgan Hill residents pay a 15% surcharge on their water bill. Domestic well owners that have replacement water have to deal with the inconveniences of bottled water and still not knowing what's going to happen in the future. For the domestic well owners who aren't getting bottled water, whose monitoring has been discontinued, that are below 6 or maybe don't even know where they are, they're expected to be satisfied with basically being left out of the cleanup strategies. They do not receive bottled water, their well may not be being monitored, and they only hear about monitored attenuation as the cleanup strategy for their well. They're constantly concerned about family members drinking water from the tap and not having any identified strategy for getting their well back down to background. The amount of time to implement the proposed cleanup strategy, plus the uncertainty about when background conditions will be restored, plus relying on monitored attenuation as a standalone remediation alternative for the majority of the contaminated plume, is simply not acceptable. What additional activities can be done now to start the cleanup process for the entire impacted area to background, and thereby provide meaningful relief to all affected parties?
Can you wrap it up, please?
At our last PCAG meeting, we had a wonderful presentation which provided several creative solutions. We begged the Water Board and Olin to think outside the box, do the brainstorming necessary to aggressively find ways to appropriately protect these communities. Thank you for your time and consideration. Sylvia Hamilton, PCAG Chair.
Thank you very much. Steve Tate.
Thank you. I am Steve Tate, and I appreciate this opportunity to address you today. I do this as a colleague of yours, since we're all in public service. I serve the 38,000 residents of Morgan Hill as its mayor. My charge is to provide the city services like police, utilities, roads, sewers, and parks, and very clearly a safe, healthy drinking water for our residents. Your public service has a much wider audience, since you serve this whole population of the Central Coast region, but your scope is a little bit narrower and is captured quite succinctly in the name of your board, the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We count on you to protect the quality of our sole source of drinking water, to make sure it is not polluted so that our residents can drink it without concern that they will get sick, and with assurance that they will be getting the same high quality that they've had in the past. I stand before you today both a little frustrated and, quite frankly, a little bit angry because of what I have to do to meet the city's charge to supply safe, healthy water. As we all know, our water supply has been corrupted by the introduction of perchlorate. And as we also all know, Olin put it there. 7 long years have gone by since it was discovered, and no one has done anything to remove it except the city of Morgan Hill. While the city has the duty to deliver clean, healthy water, you have the authority to maintain that high quality in our groundwater basin. This is your mission, as implied by the quality in the board's title. So why, especially after 7 years, hasn't the board exercised their authority to affect the cleanup of our water? Why do we have to do it ourselves at our residents' expense? Help me explain to my ratepayers why they are paying 15% perchlorate surcharge on their water bills to clean up the mess that Olin made. And why isn't Olin paying it? It has been estimated that there are over 4,000 pounds of perchlorate in the groundwater of the Yaga sub-basin. Morgan Hill ratepayers have paid over $300,000 annually to remove about 5% of it so far. The public has been forced to do Olin's job. It doesn't have to be that way. The board still has the opportunity to lead the way by ordering Olin to begin cleaning up immediately and keep cleaning up until the perchlorate has been removed from the Yaga sub-basin. I am not here to argue the law. You have our legal submittals, although I do see that you, for some unfathomable reason, you aren't accepting them all. However, I am assured that there is ample authority in state law for the board to be more aggressively assert its authority and its leadership in protecting our community's drinking water supply. And I strongly believe it is your responsibility to do so. You can timidly continue to order studies and reports and timetables with eventually as the milestone for cleanup. Your staff seems to be taking pains to avoid helping the city and its citizens get quality water. Exclusion from your order of the city's cleanup activities, the only actual cleanup that is going on, is a slap in the face of our citizens who are funding it. If timidity is the order of Olin's wait-and-see proposal, things you call monitored attenuation, I'd call it do nothing and hope, certainly fits the bill. But I believe that now is the time for bold, responsible action. Some have speculated that the slow pace so far has been motivated by a desire to avoid litigation or to avoid having to appear in Sacramento and appeals board's decisions. Picking up the pace and demanding immediate action from Olin to protect the public may indeed result in pushback from the polluter, but the alternative is for the public to keep pushing on whatever levers are available to spur action. Please do what you are charged with doing, what is clearly in the public interest and what is clearly the right thing. I shouldn't have to beg you to do the right thing, but I am. The public's interest in high-quality water is very clear. The board's mission is very clear. The board's authority to be more assertive is clear. You can make the choice to establish policies to protect the public. It's time to stop waiting and start doing. Let's get on with it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
I want to ask a question, please.
Sure.
Twice you over here.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, twice you said that the city was the only one that was removing perchlorate.
Yes.
You heard the presentation earlier about all the remediation activities that have gone on already, as well as the ion exchange systems on the wells.
From our groundwater? Yes, I did.
Okay. There, so you heard that there are lots of other remediation activities.
I'm referring to the part of the sub-basin that we draw our water from for the 38,000 residents of the city of Morgan Hill.
Wouldn't that include the Olin site?
It would include the Olin site. You are correct.
Where there was soil remediation and groundwater remediation by Olin.
Yes, it would include that.
All right.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Any questions for the mayor? No, thank you very much. Okay.
Hi.
And you are?
Andrea Ventura.
Andrea Ventura. Okay, so Mr. Tweez is going to go last.
Oh, are you with me?
No, Brad.
Whichever way you want it.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Ms. Ventura.
Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. My name is Andrea Ventura, and I am with Clean Water Action. We are a national organization with approximately 20,000 members here in California, including in the impacted area that we are discussing today. We are focused very much on ensuring that everyone has access to safe and affordable drinking water. It's near and dear to our hearts. I have to start at my comments by saying that I have actually been attending on a monthly basis, for the most part, the PCAG meetings in San Martin. And I have been, having worked with many communities and other regional boards regarding cleanup issues, I have been very impressed the way this community has worked together in addressing this distressing problem. They have informed themselves, educated themselves, and have been very reasonable in what they have done. I've also been impressed with the professionalism of the regional board staff and their commitment to working with the community. That said, I do have some concerns. Our members and our organization have some concerns about the proposed cleanup and abatement order as it is currently written. And we are working on the premise that the ultimate goal is the water quality, that we are tasked here to protect and to remediate this aquifer regardless of anything else, such as drinking water standards, public health goals, or any other sort of artificial number. The giving of bottled water to people or providing treatment on their wells is our band-aid actions over the period of time that it will take to actually remediate this problem. They are not the solutions. Especially, I might add, when you consider that this is not an even trade. The fact of the matter is that while bottled water is surely a protective measure given the contamination in the aquifer. In fact, there are far less drinking water protections on bottled water than there is in tap water. So we have to keep that in mind, that it is the actual health of the aquifer that is key here. While the cleanup and abatement order does state, as staff has done steadfastly throughout the years, that the responsible party must return the water to background levels, we continue to be confused as to why any mention of the current drinking water standard is made in any of the arguments regarding how we're going to remediate this problem. We view both the MCL, the public health goal, as utterly irrelevant to this order as required by Resolution 9249. Do refer to the fact that Olin has not offered any compelling data to demonstrate that they are not the sole source of perchlorate in the aquifer. So we would actually assert that any mention of the MCL or the PHG in the cleanup and abatement order is actually inappropriate. We would recommend actually taking it out of the CAO. Specifically, I refer to sections 20 and 25. And in addition, the references to the MCL in numbers 36, 38, and 39 should either be, in our view, deleted or revised to clearly indicate that this information is solely there in regard to the alternative water provisions. Okay? One point?
Yeah, can you wrap it up?
Okay. We also suggest that the monitored attenuation, or the role of the monitored attenuation is given in this MCL, and frankly, I'm hearing some mixed messages about what that's all about today, but that is not an adequate cleanup plan. While we will never know everything that we need to know to act perfectly, we do need to take definitive cleanup actions based on current knowledge, and I would assert that instead of referring to monitored attenuation, which actually extends the uncertainty as to our goals and where we're going to be in a few years, that we simply add adaptive management language. I have actually provided some of that to staff members based on language that was used in a TMDL for San Francisco Bay. That would offer you the flexibility without hurting the taking definitive action right now.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Mr. Briggs. Uh-huh. Or staff. Doesn't the CAO contain language that if monitored attenuation is not successful for Zone D, that staff can order active remediation?
That's the contingency plan. requirement, yes.
Okay. And that would obviously be the same for Zone C.
Right.
Okay. All right. Mr. Hawk, how many minutes did he have?
12:15.
12. So you had.
Whoa, Mr. Hawk. I'm sorry. That was for Olin. Mr. Hawk had 13. They had
13. We gave him 5.
I was granted an additional 5.
Yeah,
right.
So you got 18 any way you want, you know, but just so you know that you can just tell us what's so important about the document, and that's specifically what the additional 5 minutes was for.
Correct. I
but
understand that.
You can use that time any way you want.
No, I understand that.
Great.
So let me start with that. Thank you,
okay.
Chairman. Prior speaker spoke something that I think far more eloquently than I can, but the point was, and as it exists in the order presently constituted, paragraph 41 finally, and I think relatively clearly, states that the background level is going to be the MDL or 1.4. Paragraph 44, which is a change, and appropriately states, the central board has determined that it is not reasonable at this time to establish a cleanup level that is less stringent than background. I take that to mean 1.4 is what the cleanup level is supposed to be. And yet, what we were stressing here a little bit confusingly is that the order, and based on the letter of in June of 2007, says that Olin can clean up the zone that they want to clean up to 6 parts per billion. So there's a little inconsistency here. I agree with the prior speaker. Cleanup should be to the background, and right now background is deemed to be 1.4. If it proves not to be that, then so be it. That's point one. Point two, it was raised here today, and we alluded to it. I think Mr. Shellcross asked what the 24.5 was, just by way of background. When the EPA contracted with, I believe it was the National Health Institute or one of those organizations, they did a study on perchlorate, and that was the number that they came out with that they felt was protective of human health and fetal development. Obviously, the state of California disagrees. And so that number is not a magic number, but a phantom number as far as we're concerned here, and certainly has nothing to do with cleanup to background, which is what the non-degradation policy is all about. Now, as to monitor attenuation, I defer to Dr. Trudell, who's here, if you have any specific technical questions, but we have provided to this board over the years a multiple reports that do show that monitored attenuation is not working and that the data Olin is using is highly selective. Now, I defer to him to explain that to you because it's quite technical, but that's our belief in consistently. You remember the chart that was up here where they proudly show where monitored attenuation was working, 1,600 feet south of the site, 800 feet south of the site. Well, you know why it's working? Is because Tennant Well is removing perchlorate, and that is the only voluntary cleanup that's going on here, not the one that this board ordered on their site. So, of course, it's working. We're removing perchlorate. Why wouldn't it work? It seems to work, but they conveniently always leave that out, and in fact, in their feasibility study, when they talk about monitored attenuation, it's based in part on the continuing operation of certain municipal facilities in this area. That the only municipal facility in the area happens to be Tennant Well. In this CAO, the November 30th that was just issued, the board moved from comments into the CAO, the EPA requirements or guidelines on monitored natural attenuation. We have outlined in our submittals, in our supplemental submittal, that this situation does not meet the requirements of those guidelines. Specifically, they don't meet applicable law, which is the non-degradation policy of this state. There's been no comparison of the reasonableness done between active and passive remediation. The claim that monitored attenuation is working, as we've said before, we don't believe is correct. And evidence of the continued spread of this plume every year, now reaching 10 miles, again, that's one of the specific things that are looked at in monitored attenuation, and this plume is still moving. And I think, as the representative from ACTEC said, rapidly. Those are the key points on that, but I did want to speak about what we thought was also important, and that's the water replacement issue for Tenet. Let me make some things clear, because I think there are some facts that are wrong. Since San Pedro was put in, it's been pumping away. There may have been some times it was off for maintenance or what have you, but it, as Olin's slide said, it's not being used. That's wrong. It is being used. That's number one. Number two is, the Tenet well was put back in service after we tried to find new water after the San Pedro well was put in. The San Pedro well was put in, and Olin paid for it. There were no strings attached to that. There's no agreement. There's no nothing. And we went out and drilled the peat well. Came up dry. Summer was coming. We needed water. Condit well, as I think the declaration of Mr. Ashcroft to our original submission said, it's just not economical to operate. It's a 200-gallon per minute well. It's slightly larger than one of Olin's extraction wells. That's off. But that wouldn't even make it up. We need a Tenet well back on. So we put Tenet well back on. We had to treat it, and we've had to charge for that treatment. Since that time, we've tried two other occasions, as indicated in the declaration of Mr. Ashcroft, to find new water. We drilled the Butterfield well and I think it's called the Half Road well. Both came up dry. So it's not like we're just sitting around and looking for cleanup money. We've been actively trying to find water so we can get rid of Tenet. But guess what? We can't. Now, the chair was presented with a chart, and I think Mr. Ashcroft's declaration adequately summarizes that we needed more water. And as we argued in this supplemental submission, the CAOs are not frozen in time. Things change. We needed more water. The only place available was Tenet. Tenet is loaded with perchlorate. And as you know, the readings, again, from Mr. Ashcroft's declaration are consistently in the sixes now and in the sevens. Now, Olin says, well, we're dragging it down below. Well, I also want to point out that northeast of the Olin site is a plume of heavily contaminated water that's moving northeast, and the staff has ordered them to do something with that, to investigate it, and I think this report's done soon. So to say that we're responsible for pulling perchlorate into the lower aquifer is incorrect. I also want to add, when this Tenet well was put back in operation, we went to staff. Not the same staff that's here, because it was a while ago, but we went to staff and said, we want to put it back in. They told Olin that it would aid in remediation, it would add hydraulic control, and guess what? They're right, and that's exactly what it's doing. So we feel that whether you look at it as a remediation point, which we think can certainly be suggested, let alone ordered, in terms of protecting that well. You don't have to say put a wellhead treatment on it, but you can order Olin to protect that well or that water source, that there's no reason why we should be, the citizens of Morgan Hill should be paying to clean up Olin's perchlorate. They've allowed that. We unfortunately, as a community, have allowed Olin to store their waste in our aquifer for decades. It's time for them to get it out, and it's time for them to pay for it when appropriate. Now, you may not be able to order payment, but you certainly can order a CAO that provides for alternative replacement water for Tenet. And hopefully, if you do that, we can sit down with Olin and work out the details. Thank you.
You have 10 minutes.
And he'll take it.
Okay.
Good. I thought I was only going to end up with one. My name is Ed Tweez. I'm the city manager of the city of Morgan Hill. Mr. Chairman, members, this is my fifth appearance before the board. We first met in Salinas, then the Gilroy Council Chambers, then Monterey, and twice here. And on each occasion, Morgan Hill has had one goal in mind, and that is to lead to a comprehensive CAO issued by this board that would clean up to background the sole source of our drinking water supply. We first joined the perchlorate working group to join with public agencies because it was clear that the public's interest required some focus, and you recall that in Gilroy we shared with you a pathway to a comprehensive cleanup and abatement order. I've also had to appear before you, as apparently again I will today, to talk about the northeast area. Very early, we showed you data from a almost more than 100-year-old USGS survey that showed that in this small area of Morgan Hill, there actually was a reverse of the regional flow from north to south, and that that small reversal was in the vicinity of our northeast supply wells. We showed you data from the Department of Water Resources survey that identified the alluvial deposits and gravel deposits that now Olin in their third quarter report say they have suddenly discovered. And we showed you well elevation data from our own that demonstrated that there was indeed a flow from the Olin site to our northeast supply wells. And in fact, the recent third quarter report includes charts and words from Olin that acknowledge that fact, notwithstanding their presentation today, that they disavow any responsibility for the northeast. But this board appropriately named Olin as the responsible party. And after some more urging by us and others, you realized that it was one single plume, not two different plumes. That was not simply cut off at Tennant Avenue, and you adopted a comprehensive CAO. Our disappointment is that although Olin has been declared the responsible party, it's clear that Olin's perchlorate is in our source of drinking water. An active cleanup program has not yet been ordered. We provided you with JFLAG data. Unprecedentedly, undertook studies, and we provided you with JFLAG data to show that, because we knew that in order to get a cleanup order, you would need to know what background was. And we discovered that in all of the city's wells, there was low level of perchlorate that is stable that suggests that that's the level of background. Your CAO appropriately establishes that at 1.4, the minimum detection, the detection level. We showed you that JFLAG data showed that there was higher concentrations of perchlorate yet in our northeast supply wells that was stable and has remained stable in the 3 to 4 parts per billion range for our northeast supply wells. And we showed you that higher yet concentrations were available, were observed in our Tennant Avenue well, which has been consistently at 6 to 7 parts per billion. And I don't know whether Hector can help me. This might be an appropriate point. I want to talk about Tennant in my remaining remarks, and if you have other questions, I'd be happy to address them. I think it's the very last slide. This is a chart. The straight lines, interesting enough, are how the goalposts have moved over the years. Originally, it was, you may recall that the state of California established 18 parts per billion as the action level, and then subsequently the action level became 4, and now we have the action level moved to 6, and now it is a maximum contaminant level at 6. But the readings in Tennant Avenue have been consistently, and over 8 quarters of monitoring, we've seen no attenuation of the perchlorate in the Tennant Avenue well. And we have asked you for two things that impact the Tennant Avenue well. First, it is screened through the intermediate and deep aquifer. It is screened through your priority zone A. So we believe it is an appropriate extraction well that is operating. It's been proven technologically. It's been proven financially feasibly. It's available to begin the perchlorate contamination. Now, the mayor indicated that Morgan Hill alone had been cleaning up, and I will acknowledge that the small municipal wells to the south of us have had some cleanup effect, but only Morgan Hill has reported to you the mass of perchlorate that has been removed. We believe that is the outcome measure you should be following. What is the mass that has been removed so that we can get this perchlorate down to background? That material has been presented to you from time to time by my public works director, and this time in his declaration. We believe that the Tennant Avenue well should be part of the groundwater cleanup strategy. We also believe that the Tennant Avenue well deserves an order from this board for replacement water. It was suggested by the staff earlier that Olin was, quote, in compliance with replacement by providing funds that allowed the city to drill and operate the San Pedro well. That was not done pursuant to an order of this board. That was done voluntarily by Olin, and we appreciated that, and it did add to the capacity of our municipal water supply. We have consistently represented the data about the capacity of those wells. It's on our website, so that hasn't changed. The San Pedro well has a capacity of 600 gallons per minute. The two wells that we took out of operation were the Condit well at 200 gallons per minute and the Tennant Avenue well at 450, so it was about a rough equivalent replacement. That is not our argument. Our argument is, as Mr. Hawk suggested, that our community has continued to grow. We have responsibility to meet the needs of our community. We have looked for other sources. We have drilled three wells. They were had perchlorate in them at these background levels, but most importantly, from our production perspective, did not have sufficient water to produce. So we believe that the Tennant Avenue well is a good extraction well for the cleanup system, and we believe it's available and must be ordered by this board to be part of the remediation. We have four specific requests. I'll read them to you. We ask that the board take all necessary steps to consider the use of Morgan Hill's Tennant well for remediation. To date, Olin has not and will not consider using Tennant well for remediation. Your board staff has told us that when Olin refuses to consider it, your board will. We ask you to do that. We ask you to issue an order for replacement water for the Tennant Avenue well. We ask you to reject monitored natural attenuation as the default remediation, particularly in the northeast contamination area, admittedly not the plume core, but the area from which 38,000 people draw their drinking water supply. And finally, if background is considered by the board to be 1.4, order Olin to begin immediately to clean it up and keep cleaning it up continuously until that background has been achieved. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you for your comment. You have a little over 2 minutes. Okay. Any board comments or questions? I have a couple for you, Mr. Tweez. If the city were to take the Tennant well out of production, would you have sufficient water supply?
Not in our peak summer demand. We would not. The demand for water production is at its peak, almost three times the average in the summer, and we need the Tennant Avenue well to meet our peak demand in the summer.
When
Mr. Hawk came to the board and the staff and indicated that we wanted to turn it back on, the Olin Corporation raised concerns that it might impact their on-site remediation. And the Olin was directed to engineer their cleanup efforts with the understanding that the city would operate it on a 24/7, 365-day basis, and we agreed to do so.
I recall seeing a graph that was sent to me, I think, by your staff with some of the production and demand. Yeah.
It's one of our slides.
Do you have those, Hector? Is it in 2004 that this situation began where you're supply and demand reached a point of kind of balance?
Yes, I believe that's accurate. In preparation for today, I actually spent several hours reading news accounts over the past 4 years, and I ran into a big section of stories there where the city was urging its residents to conserve because the summer demand was reaching our capacity. And now this is the capacity of our wells. So when the demand exceeds the capacity of the wells, what's going on? Well, we have reservoirs, and those reservoirs are required first to provide pressure for the system, but second to provide fire backup. Okay. And we do propose to continue looking for new water.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have a couple of more speaker cards that we didn't get to that were, one was inserted with the Olin Group, and that's Richard Pikema. If he is here, if he'd like to address the board.
These ladies are also.
Go ahead, sir.
Chairman Young and Water Board members, thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly on perchlorate. My name is Richard Pikema, and I'm a retired chemist living in San Jose. I summarized graphically some of the information that people have been discussing on perchlorate. If I had a slide, I'd put it up there. But what I'll do is give one of your folks here copies, and you can have your own slide later. It doesn't need to go into the record as far as I'm concerned. But they're talking about MCLs and MDLs and EPA's 24.5 stuff. I got into this fray. I appear to be wearing the black hat in this situation, and I personally feel that it's not possible to clean up the aquifer to the level that people are wishing that it gets cleaned up to. The aquifer of 150,000 acre feet is equivalent to a lake of about 15 miles long, 5 miles wide, and 3 feet deep. And that's now in ground that you've got to get it out and get it back into, and I just don't see any way of having that happen. The one disagreement that I had with your staff had to do with the term degraded, and the term degraded water quality is important in determining your authority to implement controls. And if the water isn't degraded, you don't have any need to do the cleanup that you're talking about. So they would say the mere presence of perchlorate is evidence of degradation, and I would question how you determine that mere presence. The MDL of 1.4 parts per billion is presently used. If you use 0.05 parts per billion, which the CDC used in testing perchlorate in people's urine, then you've got a different ball game. So I have some concerns about how you define degraded, not only with regard to cleanup purposes, but with regard to the authority to implement those controls. There's a lot that could be said, and I was only trying to share some light on a complicated problem that has a lot of numbers associated with it, and the chart that I have tends to put these parts per billion in a graphical form, and I will leave them with somebody to distribute in at your convenience.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions for Mr. Hikuma? Okay. All right. Mr. Briggs, I think we're back to Olin having the balance of their time to speak if they wish to.
You can start the clock. I don't think we'll use all of it. Okay. Are there any questions that you'd like to ask of us?
Well, why don't you go ahead and use any time you want to, and then we do have questions, but I'd like to get the time, your presentation completed.